It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 612. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. Please leave me a voicemail. The phone number is 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word on Skype. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and also Facebook, facebook.com/MikeTechShow. Have a great show lined up with a guest. It's going to be all Mac, the entire show. So before we get started, I want to thank Instant House Call for sponsoring this podcast. Instant House Call is the best remote support tool that you can use to remote in, auto-fix clients, log in unattended in Windows and be able to take over the machine and apply updates, fix problems. It's incredible software, and you can try it free for 15 days by going to instanthousecall.com or by clicking on the link on the left-hand side of the main page at miketechshow.com. And remember to use the promo code MikeTechShow. I want to also remind everybody that the Unconvention 2017 is all set. You can sign up now and save money and buy your tickets for Early Bird Special. The conference is September 16th and 17th. It's in Washington, D.C. We look forward to seeing you there. I will have the link in the show notes so you can check out and get all the information. And if you have any questions, please email me and I will get back to you right away. I want to welcome today's guest, Dave Greenbaum, our resident Mac expert who will share his knowledge and answer questions. And I'm so glad to have him today. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it. As you know, they're known as Dr. Dave, and I have been doing this professionally on my own since 2003, but really started in the industry, believe it or not, in high school when we got our first Mac in 1984, and nobody really knew how to use it. So, I would skip study hall and stuff like that and start working on the Mac and became the resident expert in high school. And then have really been following Apple and the Mac industry ever since then, leading up to today, where about 50% of our client base is Macintosh and doing Macintosh support.
Well, that's great. So how long have you been in business actually supporting Macs and, you know, problems?
On my own, since 2003. That became my full-time job. I left the corporate world, but kind of on the side and really in the industry, I tell people since 1990. When I was in college, I started doing it. I became one of those pizza techs as a side business. And I finished up college, went to law school for a while, didn't like law school, joined corporate America, and then left that after a year, and then worked, helped develop a tech support company. And then they got bought out by someone else. And as part of that buyout, I left the company, went to another company for a while, and then said, forget this. I can do this better myself. So one day I told my boss, we're done. The phone kept ringing, and that was August of 2003. And I've been in business ever since.
Oh, that's great. I've been in business for myself since 2008 and left the corporate world. But didn't along the way, I had a little exposure for Mac. I had a Mac. I bought this at a flea market, and it was that blue iBook, I think. And then played with that a little bit and got my feet wet, but never became an expert. And that's why you're here today. And what's been missing for the techs, the consultants like myself, where we're in a Windows world. Now, I do support Macs because I have an opinion on some of the things that I've been doing just to clean it up and help keep it going. I have a couple clients that they're all Mac in their shop. They even have a Mac server. So I need to fine tune my skills on what to do. And I have a lot of listeners that are in the boat of consulting or repair that need that. What do I do? How do I become good at a Mac? Because there's a lot of money being left on the table for people not supporting the Macs. And you wouldn't believe the people that the clients that I've run into, even the few that I have, they're like, oh my God, you do Mac. That's fantastic. You know, and they're so happy to hear that. So there is a need out there, and there's a little void, and maybe we'll do our small part today, you and I, and you're going to help fill that void. So if you're ready, we're going to start out with three questions that sure. I've received, and two of them were from text messages from Lori. So the first question, and then we're going to get into a lot of great detail and good info here. Was Mac Keeper once a good product? I remember years ago, it would help clean up items. Has it gone more rogue in the past few years?
It has not gone rogue. It has always been rogue. And I'm putting in the chat right now, there was actually a class action regarding it was such a bad product that they had to pay out to people who bought it. It has never been a good product. It's just like,
wow,
what are those late night infomercials, PC speed up and yeah. all that yes. other crap. It
good
that's
comparison.
The beauty of okay. the Mac world. We have the same scams and the same BS stuff as the PC world.
Now, when you run into a client, what's your method of getting rid of Mac Keeper? When you run into someone, if they called you and say, I got this thing in it. I don't know. Is it good or bad? And you help them get rid of it.
You know, it's bad. And I had one client who was absolutely unequivocally convinced that it was a good product. Mm-hmm. No matter how much I tried to tell him no. And we kept it on there. It's fairly straightforward to remove. There's a procedure. You basically drag the product in the trash. It goes ahead and it runs the uninstaller. And that's a lot of times where I'll do some malware on a PC. I'll run the uninstaller and then I'll go ahead and run a malware byte. So it's usually fairly straightforward to remove that way. And then I'll do a cleanup with malware bytes and stuff like that.
I'm glad you said that. When I ran malware bytes in cleaning a system, I seen it was cleaning up stuff from Mac Keeper. So yeah. they recognize that as junk, you know, or, you know, as adware or, you know, whatever, malicious, you know.
And so speaking of good. That, there's another product that I recommend for malware removal or for malware detection, not removal.
What is
there's
that?
Malware bytes, which is awesome.
Right.
There's a program called Etrecheck, Etrecheck. I love that product for two reasons. Number one, is it free?
Or
it's free.
Oh, good.
It's
good,
totally
good.
Free.
Excellent.
It'll detect malware. It won't actually remove it. It just points to where it is. And usually it's kind of getting those little cleanup things that malware bytes didn't quite catch. But it will also give you a full system analysis.
Ooh,
so
okay,
we run it on every single client and we capture a snapshot of their entire system that way. And then if there's anything weird as far as something we don't like that maybe Malwarebytes doesn't see as malware, we go ahead and remove it anyway. And it does even a performance check.
I just wrote that down. That is the first program when we're done this show that I'm running on my iMac right beside me because I've never heard of it, never seen it, and that's awesome. And right there are the gems that we need here. So that's cool. Lori's second question. Does Time Machine back up the Windows partition? Does it back up data or data and image? And I'm going to put a caveat there for me.
Okay.
Answer this in terms of Parallels, VMware, and Bootcamp. Is there a difference?
Absolutely. Okay. So let's start with virtual machines. As you know, a virtual machine is just one big file on the computer.
Yep.
That is actually backed up by Time Machine.
Okay.
And that's actually somewhat bad because every time you change that virtual machine, it has to back up that whole thing over again.
So it could be backing it up every single night. Or...
Exactly. Wow. Which can be a benefit and a drawback.
Right, right.
Because if there is a problem, then you can go back at any point in time to the entire Windows state. Now, I believe both VMware and Parallels have their snapshot technology that they will protect the initial image and just write out the changes. So sometimes it's not as bad with Time Machine that way. But yeah, you're backing that up the whole time.
Right.
If you run out of space on your Time Machine, a lot of times people exclude that disk image.
Right. And maybe now, I don't think Time Machine's all or nothing. I can't say, or can I say, I want the virtual machine to back up once a week only? Or can I get that fine control, or do we got to go to another program if we have to?
Okay. As far as back, you could say you could exclude things from the backup. So if you didn't want to back up the virtual disk image, you could exclude it from Time Machine.
Okay.
One of the tricks that I do, and it's a controversial trick, is I actually exclude the system, the operating system, from the Time Machine backup. My theory is we're going to install a new operating system anyway, so why waste the time and why waste the space?
Yep.
Makes it a little bit harder to do the restore. But yeah, you can exclude that.
Okay.
I don't know. I know of a utility where you can change the default of every hour for Time Machine backup. I don't know of a utility that will
change its schedule of what it's doing.
Change the schedule on a specific item.
All right. No, that's good. But the message here is it's not backing up. Well, it is backing up, I guess, the individual data within that. If it grabs the whole Time Machine, you'll get everything that's in that virtual file, that virtual machine file. So you will basically, just by the fact that you're getting that whole image, you're going to get everything that's in there and anything that changed within there.
Yeah, I wouldn't back it up that way.
Yeah.
What I would do is it would be the same thing with now. Your second question was Bootcamp, where it's a completely separate partition.
Okay.
That is not backed up via Time Machine.
All right. And that doesn't see the Mac partition when you boot into that, right? That's just a full on Windows when you boot into Bootcamp.
Depending on the version of the Mac operating system, it can sometimes see those files, or I'm sorry, the Windows operating system, it can sometimes see those files, but it really can't change them.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. So that way, if you get a ransomware or something like that, it won't affect the Mac as much.
Okay.
I would say the backup procedures for those will be, you know, both operating systems, whether it's a virtual operating system or the full blown partition,
a traditional Windows
backup within Windows.
Right. Okay.
Any type of data backup.
Yeah, and I always advise people to have their own antivirus within an anti-malware within their partition or the virtual machine, because you got to protect your machine, you know. And, your traditional Windows programs, it's got to do Windows updates. It's got to do, you know. Do you have a preference, Parallels versus VMware? Because I know I do.
Right now I have a slight preference towards VMware.
That's mine.
Because it works on different operating systems. So you can easily take a virtual disk image from a PC and then do a little bit of conversion and run it on a Mac. So that's kind of nice.
Yeah.
And they offer, I think they offer a better deal to, consultants. So I was able to get an NFR of it easier.
Okay. I had trouble when I first ran into Parallels with a client, and I've just never had issues with VMware. So I had a dental client that to see their Invisalign animation, they had to run Internet Explorer a couple years ago. So I had to put VMware on all their Macs. That was funny because this was someone trying to avoid Windows at all cost and couldn't because he wouldn't be able to display the Invisalign animation. That's the for braces and stuff. So to see the progression of your teeth, had to be Internet Explorer. Since then, it now supports other browsers and he doesn't have to have VMware. But I got into starting to do VMware because I tried to run Parallels for this client. I couldn't get it running right and just couldn't. And I just, that's it. I downloaded the 30-day trial of VMware. It worked. And I was like, okay, let's buy this. You know, that was when I guess I was first starting virtualization. Do you ever use Bootcamp or know anybody that uses Bootcamp? I don't run into that much.
The people that I know that use Bootcamp are people that really need every aspect of the computer. Okay. The clients that I have that run a Bootcamp are engineers, AutoCAD and stuff like that.
Okay.
AutoCAD doesn't run well in virtualization and gamers.
Why not get a separate PC? Anyway, that's right. I've actually had this conversation with a client. And I said, if you got that heavy Windows load, don't buy an expensive Mac to do it. Let's get a decent Windows system for you. Have both.
But it's things they don't use that often. So they actually the designers and engineers that use the AutoCAD, they don't even really connect to the internet on the Windows side. They're like, okay, this is work. This is all I'm going to do. This is all I'm going to focus on. And then I feel a lot safer on the Mac side to do all the internet stuff and all that.
Couple good things coming out of the chat. The last two messages. Does Time Machine do deduplication? Is that the right way to phrase that?
I think that's the right way of phrasing it. And I believe the answer is no.
Okay.
It writes out all the changes. I'm pretty sure. Right. No. Like things like CrashPlan and all that do deduplication.
Right. Which just the bit changes.
Doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just the bits that are changing that are okay. Alaskan in the chat brings up something that I was going to hit later, but let's do it now. I need the take on give me your best practices for the clients that live in multiple environments. What should the external drive be formatted as? And what are the limits if you have this available? And so I can take an external drive, save files from my Mac, take it over to my Windows machine, any version of Windows, and I'm going to be able to read it. And then he specifically mentions there's a HFS Plus and using it in Windows. And I know there's a utility that you can run on the Mac. Which what do you do for clients or people that have to live in different environments and they need to share data between them?
Okay, so I have done XFAT before. There are people that say XFAT is not reliable. Okay. I haven't had a problem with it. So you can format it XFAT and then it reads on Mac, PC without a problem.
And XFAT is EXFAT for everybody.
Correct. Yes. Correct. And then
is there a size limit? Like, is that like NTFS? You can't, and I think we'd have to look this up or something. But
yeah.
NTFS, you cannot write anything over 2 gig. So, or no, excuse me, FAT. You can't
FAT 32.
Write FAT 32. So this happened on I was trying to copy a file that was 15 gig for a friend the other day in his USB stick. We had to reformat it to NTFS because this is on the Windows side. I don't know what EXFAT, what their limits are. Like, cause sometimes there's big files that you might be copying. And, is that better than, I guess, NTFS or can the Mac read NTFS?
The Mac can read NTFS.
But it can't write it, I think.
I don't think it can write it still without third-party options. There's a company called Paragon that has software that allows you to read-write on NTFS on the Mac, and that's usually what I install. And a lot of times when you buy hard drives like from Seagate or Western Digital, sometimes they throw in – the software to read right in TFS. And sometimes they limit it towards that specific hard drive brand. Sometimes it's universal. I know I have Paragon on my Mac, so that way I can read write NTFS partitions.
That is awesome. Awesome. All right. I think we beat that up pretty good. This is the third question, and this is from Bruce. And by the way, he was at the Young Convention. He says, this is Bruce of Patient Computer Help, the oldest guy at the Young Convention. I've been listening to your podcast ever since and always learned something. On a recent show, you were discussing Macs and the various malware issues. I service a lot of Macs, and it happens to be my personal computer of choice as well. The issue is antivirus for Macs comes up on occasion, and it's hard to decide the right choice. I'll describe my approach, and it's worked well. First, Malwarebytes for Mac is a godsend. I think we all agree on that.
Yeah.
Any Mac with issues, that's the first thing I use. As you mentioned, it also gets Mac Keeper and Mega Backup off. That was the name I couldn't think of in the pre-show.
Yeah.
Mega Backup. Yeah, that's bad. Bad. After my other tweaks for performance, which I want you to tell me them later, I want to know what your tweaks are, I generally do not install any antivirus, as I find they generally slow down a Mac considerably. At least that's my experience. I used to run ESET cybersecurity on my own Mac. After living with it for a few months, I took it off, and I felt I had a fast machine again. I haven't tried the Avast that you recommend. I recommend Avast, and we'll get to that in a second. Well, you know what? Let's take that, and then he has a secondary question. What is your recommendation and approach for antivirus for the Mac?
So I think Bruce has a doubt. I make sure every client has Malwarebytes on it and will always run that. We find it's more the browsers are getting infected than the actual operating system.
Okay.
And we get those potentially unwanted programs. There are viruses out there, and Apple, through the XProtect, actually has a lot of protections built in for that. And if you try to install software that isn't digitally signed through the gatekeeper, the average user won't be able to install it, which is, you know, what they're going to put in the new version of Windows.
Right.
Things that don't come from the Windows store, it's harder to install. So if they need to run an antivirus, for example, for FINRA compliance or one of those other programs,
yes,
they have to have an antivirus on there. We recommend Sophos. Sophos is, as far as preventing viruses from coming in, that has the least impact of any of the antiviruses out there. But I don't run an antivirus on my Mac, and we don't recommend it unless a client specifically asks for it.
It's funny. I have Sophos on my iMac, and I have Avast on my MacBook Pro because I wanted to see. But I don't use the systems enough on a daily basis to see if they're being bogged down, though. So that's one of my things. I don't, and that's why it's good to hear that. So Sophos. So when I was doing like my online research, a couple years ago, that's what I found was Sophos and Avast seemed to be the. And I've been recommending Avast, but I will change. But I will say this. I don't buy all the add-ons they're trying to sell. You know, they have like all this other protection and all these other things. I just have the base Avast. I have a question. When, and this is for Malwarebytes, and I'm getting ready to send this email. When is Malwarebytes going to be proactive in stopping for the Mac? Because right now it's after the fact that you run it. And when is it going to do an auto update? Because I don't think it auto updates yet. Does it?
I think it updates when you open it.
When you open it? Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
A good question. When we posted on Facebook, this was part of after the Unconvention, a couple people went to Malwarebytes headquarters and got to talk with people. So I sat next to the guy who wrote and supported the Malwarebytes for the Mac.
Right.
He actually had his own product and it was sold. If I had to guess, I would say probably never.
Oh, really?
It's just not. I just don't think it's needed.
Oh, wow.
The performance hit would just be too much, and I think getting it hooked into the operating system would be a little bit hard, but that's me now, just doing complete conjecture.
I'm going to bring this up, and I know Corey won't mind. One of the – I love Instant House Call. Use it. It's a sponsor for the show, but it's limited on the Mac side, and it's because we can't have unattended mode is huge, and I still run into, and Corey recognizes this, it's an issue, you get a black screen. I got a separate email from Bruce. He runs into this a lot, and so do I. And we have to go to the competition to sometimes remote into a Mac because sometimes it just doesn't sync up right, and you get this black screen. How do you currently remote into people?
So I think Corey and I have talked about that and worked on it. I believe that has been fixed, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
Check with Corey on that. Corey and I, we worked on that, the latest build, I want to say about 2 or 3 months ago.
So that'd be 6.3.
Yeah, we identified the issue. I worked with him, and we weren't able to reproduce it anymore. So that's a good sign.
Nice. That's nice. Matter of fact, I worked with Corey on the Windows 10 dual monitor bug. All my clients had dual monitors. And all of a sudden, when they went to Windows 10, no more dual monitors and remote access. And that was a problem. And so he had to give me and that's what's great with working with vendors that respond. That's why I love Instant House Call. I got to build in between updates that fixes the problem, just like Malwarebytes, because of knowing Alex and Mike, who we met at the Young Convention. And this is why you go to these things, so you can meet people like this. I got a tween build because of a little problem that not all computers have, and I got to put that in my show notes and link it to a Malwarebytes forum. Mike responded. I sent him the email at 3 a.m. I get the response back at like 4 a.m. You know, it is awesome having that kind of access to the vendors, and that's what's so important, you know, for the conventions that Dave and I are helping with and going to. This is a big reason so you can make these connections. Anyway, that's great. So
that's fixed. I think that's fixed. But the other thing you can do, a lot of people don't recognize, is the Messages app that's built into most of the modern Mac operating systems. If someone is a contact and they're logged in, you can make a remote connection request. The basics of remote connection are built into the Mac.
Okay.
So it's designed, if let's say you're at home and you want to connect to a work computer, that's built into the operating system. And you can actually, if you go ahead and click, if you're in the Messages app and you click on details, you'll see an option to ask for a remote connection. They, I believe, have to be running 10.7 line or later.
Okay.
But that's what I will usually do if for some reason either Instant House Call isn't working, or you and I both know sometimes getting clients to download things is just really difficult.
Oh, yeah.
So it's after we kind of get into that, I don't know where it downloaded. Can you open up Messages? Can I send you a text message real quick? Yeah. Okay. Let me go ahead and remote in and accept the connection request and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think we covered Bruce's second half of the question, so I'm going to add one. All right. Before the show, I mentioned I recommend CCleaner. So let's get this out and onto the table. Because I use it on the Windows world, I seen it was for the Mac. It seemed to run. It was free. And it, you know, it doesn't do a lot, but it does some cleanup. I was like, okay, I've been using CCleaner. What do you use? And do you like CCleaner for the Mac?
CCleaner on the PC is great. I love it. The Mac version is really scaled down, and they're trying to make it look like the PC version and do PC things. The problem is it's Mac, so it's going to be different.
Right.
The equivalent and that does a lot more is whatever operating system, Sierra Cache Cleaner, CACHE. It does everything CCleaner does and 1,000 times more. It does, you can set it to do every maintenance script. You can set it to do, it even has a built-in antivirus through ClamAV.
Okay,
it is the indispensable tool
now,
for supporting Macs.
Is it free?
It's Nagware.
Okay. Okay. All right.
So you have to, you open it. I think the longer it's been on the machine, the more seconds it has to, it waits to open.
So what do you do when, if you got a one-off client? So let's say I call you, I call Dr. Dave and I need you to remote in to help me with my Mac. Do you use Cache Clean and then remove it?
That's one of those things that depends on your business environment. I know some PC techs who will remove Malwarebytes, any tool that they run. I leave it on the computer. I figure the client will call me if they have any questions or if I want to remote in, the tool's already there. Okay. So I will leave it on there. And if they're having a problem and I want them to clear the cache or something like that,
all right,
I will say, go ahead and open up this program. It's already in your utilities folder.
Okay. Great follow-up here in the chat from Tom. What do you think of Onyx for the Mac? O-N-Y-X.
Coke versus Pepsi. I think it's a great product as well. It does, I think, almost the same thing as Sierra Cache Cleaner. I just like it better. I think for the most part they do the exact same thing. They go ahead, they let you get into the underneath the operating system and tweak things. I just feel more comfortable with Cache Cleaner.
Okay. All right. I've ran into that because when you go online and you're searching for this stuff, there's a lot of people recommending Onyx. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
I remember using it and didn't like it. Like when I tried to play with it. So that's why I'm going to try the Cache Cleaner. So
I think it does a little, Cache Cleaner does a little bit more optimization. I think I know sometimes when things just aren't right, I can say, optimize everything. And it's like Windows Repair Toolkit. You just click a button and it does 20 things behind the scenes and 5 minutes later it asks you to reboot. So,
yep.
And you can have both.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. And then you can always remove them or do. Now, yeah, Onyx, I think, is free too. And then it's got one of those things that you can pay, I think, for the pro version or something like that.
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Or at least I remembered that. I'm going to skip around on Dave here because we kind of had a makeshift outline. I want to know, this is a burning question and you hit on it. How does a non-Mac tech get started? What do you recommend?
Get an old Mac. People, if I had to give you a very specific idea, I would try to find a MacBook with a cracked screen. Those things get dropped so often, and any Mac repair with hardware beyond a hard drive is horribly expensive.
Right.
Because Apple has control of the product line and stuff like that. Even though I've been saying to a lot of clients lately, there are a lot of right to repair bills going through legislatures. Mm-hmm. And if those pass, then we will have access to the same tools Apple has to repair their products, which should make it a lot cheaper. But without that, you're talking a lot of money. So people put it on eBay or something like that. Mm. And you could hook it up to an external monitor, and that's the way you get started. You really got to live in it.
Right. What about a Mac Mini? Do you like the Mac Mini and recommend it for something like this?
That would be fine. That would be totally cool.
Okay.
I think that you're probably going to find a broken MacBook, older model, cheaper than you would a Mac Mini. Make sure, I would say it has to support at least Lion.
I'm thinking even more current. Like you got to be able to have the current operating system because that's what they're going to be running into, I think.
No. I think that would be ideal. I think if I were starting out, I would say, if you can't afford that for a couple months,
don't make
try to get started with Lion. Just get started somewhere. Yes.
Right. But I'm glad you had to cut off a Lion because that's sort of mine. Like I kind of thought anything pre-Lion's too old. You know, everything begins as sort of as Lion came out. And for those non-Mac people, they would use animals and it was always cats for a lot of their versions. And then they started with we have El Capitan mountain ranges, right? El Capitan, Sierra, right?
We started with Mavericks. I think Mavericks was the first one, which I think is a beach in California. And
okay.
I don't understand Apple. Why they change that stuff. They're just trying to be cute and different. I think they kind of got the cue from Windows of, you know, we have Millennial Edition and Creators Edition, and they're trying to get all fancy because we don't want numbers anymore.
Right. Right.
So, hey, there's always a number behind it. Sierra is 1012.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
And Sierra.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, something I had that my middle son got a hold of. He has an older iMac, one of the thicker iMacs that didn't support the latest operating systems. He got a, I don't know if it's a Rogue, he bought online a USB and instructions. And you got to go through all these instructions, but you can legitimately put Sierra from a USB stick. And I was like, this is awesome. Like, if I ever got a clean, like redo someone, how do you reimage? Like, do you keep all the operating systems as like bootable USBs?
So once you get above Lion, they're free from Apple. The problem is it's got to be associated with your Apple ID. So you can, once your Apple ID is associated with any of those newer versions, it's kind of like the digital entitlement with Windows 10.
Once
you got it, you can get it. For your, it doesn't follow the machine. It follows your login. So I have, it's harder if you're starting out because the machine's going to come with Sierra or something like that. You can't get those old versions, but they're actually very easy. They're kind of like ISOs.
Right.
It's one file, and there's a program that I use called Disk Maker X. Okay. And that will create the installer from a USB. So I just have a USB installer. I could get one of those fancy, you know, those bootables where you can press the button to switch between the installers. But these flash drives are so cheap. I just go ahead and have one for every operating system from Lion on.
Okay. I remember the first time it was Mavericks. I think I was downloading and I wanted to install it on I wanted to like do a clean install for my 2010 vintage MacBook Pro, which you'll have to pry out of my cold, dead hands. I love that thing. I put my own SSD in it. I upgraded the memory. It still has an optical drive. I just love it. And I needed to do Mavericks, and I read online there was a trick. When you have a machine that's downloading, don't install it yet. Take that image that they downloaded and copy it because it deletes itself after it's installed. And that's what they were doing. And back in Mavericks, I remember reading that once, and I was like, wow, okay. And I made my own bootable Mavericks USB. And that's how I was like reimaging, you know, systems back then. So
that's not the best idea. And I'll tell you why. Is because that file downloaded is associated with your Apple ID.
That's,
So when you run the disk maker, or there's a way to do it in terminal, and there's like 20 commands to do it, you strip out your identification.
Okay.
So I've seen problems where someone who wasn't as experienced on Mac will go ahead and we'll do the installer and it wants to log into their Apple ID in the App Store. You've probably seen that sometimes with iPhones.
Right.
Someone switched their, it's the same type of environment and it can cause problems. So you want to strip out your store and Apple ID information from the file.
Let me tell you something I've ran into when you talk about the Apple ID. I have a client that is a forensic psychiatrist, and they have multiple Apple devices, and they have one main account. And we tried to get a brand new iMac synced. It did some updates. Like we were trying to get things to sync for iCloud to sync. Couldn't sync. We redid the permissions. We redid everything, reset the keychain. I followed everything I could. It took Apple online. She actually had they gave up in a couple hours. She actually had to bring it to a store. And you know what their solution was? They reimaged it for her. And I was like, wow, they couldn't fix a permissions issue where we were trying to just add. And I was like, have you ran into some advanced iCloud ID problems with clients and with people that, you know, this was the only one I've ran into like this, but I've also read horror stories online.
Yes, I've experienced them. And one of the tricky things is there can be a difference between an Apple ID and an iCloud account.
I thought they were one in the same.
That usually they are one and the same. It depends on how long you've had your Apple ID. And you can create another iCloud account. So what I see sometimes, especially with the iPhones, they go in, they buy a new iPhone, and they're like, okay, I need your iCloud ID or your Apple ID or something like that. Oh, I don't remember any of my passwords. They want to get the person out of the store. So they go ahead and create a new Apple ID for the person, but still have the same iCloud account.
Wow.
And that's where things get all screwed up. Or they get a new Mac, not realizing that they already have an Apple ID, and create a new one. Because that's one of the things when you turn on the Mac, it says, hey, do you have an Apple ID? And you're like, I don't know if I have an Apple ID. What's an Apple ID? I've got an iTunes name and password. Which is the same thing,
but it's called something different.
So you don't know. You create a new account and you start getting this blossoming of Apple IDs and iClouds. And then you have the opposite problem with some clients. They use husband and wife use the same iCloud or Apple ID.
And their kids. Oh, yes.
I'll tell you a funny story where a lot of times there's those hand-me-downs of, okay, mom and dad got a new iPad. Let's give the old iPad to the kid. Not realizing that when you have your iCloud on that old iPad, because, you know, you got all the information and you never wiped it and stuff like that, the text messages go to every device.
Yes.
And if you're sending adult messages to your spouse, which should be private, they aren't private when the kid comes and says, what's this, mommy?
Right. And by the way, been there and had that with a client where he's a Windows client, but he just happens to have a bunch of iPhones.
Right.
And that's exactly what they did. And we're talking the kids were 5 and 6, you know. So, yes, I guess the message is every person should have their own unique Apple ID that is their iTunes ID and their iCloud, and keep them all under the one email, preferably. Now I'm going to add something else. Do you agree with that first?
It depends. I think everyone should have their own Apple ID.
Okay.
Some families like sharing iCloud accounts because husband has, you know, doesn't really have all the contact information, doesn't have a good example. They don't know who the kids' teachers are, who the kids' doctors are, and all that. Wife will keep all that information. It's like, okay, I'm just going to have her contacts on my phone. So that way we don't have to know, we don't have to worry about, do you have the information? Do you have the information? Same thing with calendars. Sometimes it's just easier to share that information between two people. Now, there's, of course, ways in the iOS for two people to share that information with one another with their own iCloud accounts, but sometimes people just don't want to do that. So right. I am more insistent on individual Apple IDs than I am individual iCloud accounts.
Okay. Because then I was even going to add another layer to this. Not only do I want them to have their own accounts, I lost my train of thought here, but I remember having when my kids were younger than 18, because they didn't have a credit card at the time. You could still set up children's iTunes accounts and just use like Apple gift cards to like fill it.
Right.
And this way they're not going to kill your credit card, you know? So that's something that I started doing a while ago, and I made sure all my kids, everybody, you know, until some of them, you know, now I got one child that went rogue and is just Android only, you know, but the sits and uses an iMac behind me, you know?
Yeah.
I'm almost ready to go there too. I'm ready to give up my iPhone. And I've been an iPhone advocate, and everybody hearing this for the first time that listens to this. I have had it with AT&T and the iPhone. So it's just been it's been a nightmare to just have a phone to use, you know? And wow. I'm ready to go to a flip phone just for the main number, you know, because it's so bad. But given that, that's going to push me to Android, by the way, I think for phone. What do you do iPhone support? Or is this the kind of help you kind of clean up IDs and help them? Hey, I want to sync this and I want to not sync that. Do you get involved in that?
We do, because it's people start out a lot of times with the iPhone. And they're like, oh my gosh, I love this thing. I'm going to get a Mac. They want everything to sync back and forth. So when it comes to screen repairs or hardware issues with an iPhone, no, we don't mess with that. But we will deal with issues related to an iPhone. So someone says, hey, I've got an iPhone or I've got an iPad. I want to be able to sync things back and forth. I have a movie that I downloaded on my desktop. How do I do it portably? How do I print from my iPhone? How do I present? I've got a presentation. How do I take what's on my iPhone and present it on a Mac or an Apple TV or something like that? Right. It's kind of that ecosystem, and people want to move seamlessly back and forth, and it goes to the whole why you need to do Mac more, because once your client has an iPhone, you've got to be prepared to support Apple issues.
Exactly. And it's why I've always said and you know, as much as I moan and complain about my iPhone, I'm probably going to keep it for this very reason. My biggest retainer clients, almost all of them, the CEOs, COOs, CFOs live in an Apple ecosystem at home. And I have to support that. And I want them to remain as a client. I don't want them talking to someone else and possibly learn that there's another opportunity for someone to help them. I want to help them. So that's why I own every Apple device. I have the latest Apple TV here. I have, you know, I have an iPad mini, an iPad Air, an iMac, a MacBook Pro, and an iPhone. I got it all. And it's because of that, it's because of my clients. And I want to continue to make money, and I can bill them for going to their house and doing these things. That is, and I'm glad you brought that up, that is what motivated me to embrace the Mac, because I seen a hole, a void that's not being filled, and I want to fill it. And that's the way to stay making money. And you gotta flow with where the business is. And right now, I recommend everybody listening to this to start embracing Mac support and start picking it up. Put your foot in the water and learn, you know. And that's why we're doing this show. So you just happen to already start out in the Mac, you know?
Yeah. And it's funny. I have an Android phone primarily for the reason, because I feel like I need to be able to support Android more.
I have a Samsung tablet. Yeah. I have a Samsung tablet just for that reason. So I can configure email and do basic things. Yes.
You got to be doing this stuff. If you just wait for the Mac calls to come in, you're just not going to be familiar with it enough to really do a good job. And clients can sense that.
Yes.
A lot. They're like, well, why, if you don't know this stuff, why don't I take it to the Apple store? And the Apple store convinced them to switch their PC to a Mac. And if you don't support the Mac, you've lost a client. Yep. Apple is going to be is your supplier, and in some ways is going to be your biggest competitor. And that is always a sticky widget dealing with Apple,
which is what
they don't want to pay you when they're like, hey, I could take it to an Apple store and they'll do it for free.
So with that, lead into you what you listed as your common questions. That's a great segue about the Apple Authorized Repair Center. And go ahead. I'll let you take it.
Well, so it gets confusing. As just the average technician, there's nothing stopping us from working on an Apple product. We could repair the hardware in theory. The hard part is getting the parts for it. Apple only will sell the parts to Apple authorized service providers. Now, there are third parties you can get it from, and like iFixit is a great example. Mm-hmm. They will sell you Apple parts, but they're counterfeit, essentially. They're not actual Apple parts.
They make the best tools in the world. I love them.
They do. And we've talked that if you are going into this industry at all and you want to do the Mac stuff, get set up with a reseller account with them.
Yep.
You will get a significant discount and you will get quicker shipping through them.
Okay.
So only Apple can really get those parts directly. If it's under warranty, you can't work on it and get warranty reimbursement. There's nothing stopping you from working on something that's under warranty.
Right.
You just, again, can't get the parts for it. So when people say, what's the difference between myself and an Apple authorized service provider? I can't get the parts easily and I can't handle your warranty. So if we have a client that has a problem, I was just had a client on Friday, just got a Mac 3 months ago, and I think the logic board is bad. I have to tell her we're going to have to take it to the Apple store.
Right.
I've ran into that. I can't work on that.
By the way, bad logic boards, I'm just going to throw this in. I had two separate clients that an update killed their Mac and their MacBook. Apple fixed it for nothing and they were out of warranty. It doesn't hurt to ask. And especially if you own a lot of Apple devices. And I don't know if you've ran into that, where I've seen that, at least in my area here in Pennsylvania, there's a Mac store that if you plead your case enough and say, look, I believe this was Apple's fault and you're out of warranty, they might honor it and might fix it.
If they don't, it really depends on who you speak with at the Apple retail store.
Okay.
They have – the difference between – one of the questions, what's the difference between the Apple store, the Apple retail store, and the Apple authorized service provider like Simply Mac is a nationwide chain?
Okay.
They don't have as much leeway. They have to go to Apple and get reimbursement. That's why you don't see a lot of Apple authorized service providers.
Okay.
Because when it comes to parts, I mean, I'm talking a little bit conspiracy theory, but I don't think so. You've got a logic board. You've got the Apple retail store, and you've got a client that needs it. And then you've got Simply Mac down the street, then Apple authorized service provider that needs that logic board. Guess where Apple ships that logic board to first? They ship it to the Apple retail store. So I worked very closely for many years with an Apple authorized service provider, and they went out of business because they simply couldn't get the parts in inventory. It was going down the street to Apple every single time. There was an incident one time where they were working on a Mac. They had trouble with it, the Apple authorized service provider. The client took it to Apple, and they just replaced it for free. Mm. And that's not an option that the Apple authorized service provider ever has available to them. They can't just swap out a Mac. Apple will do that a lot of times. If it has a continuing problem, they'll just swap it out. So yeah, as far as complaining, you're not going to get anywhere with an Apple authorized service provider as far as getting an exception to a
right.
repair.
I'm Only talking Apple store, right. And I'm talking Apple stores that I would send someone. Because I would look, I don't do any Apple hardware. None. I will just do cleaning up the system, tweaking it, and I will get them to print, do networking, help them install software, uninstall things, but I will not crack open a Mac, and I just don't feel comfortable, and I don't have the patience, and I don't have that's not me. I send them to an Apple store. I've never used Apple authorized repair center until what I'm going to describe right now. I have a beautiful 27-inch, couple years old, iMac with 32 gigs of RAM. That's phenomenal, but I hate my 3 terabyte hard drive for speed. I want to put at least a terabyte SSD in there, but I'm not going to crack that open and open it. So I called an Apple store and I said, hey, can I schedule? And I'm willing to pay and I'm willing to buy the SSD from you. And he said, we don't do that.
Nope.
We will not do that. So I got to go to like Micro Center, that is an authorized, and call them and make a scheduled appointment and, go take it. And it's like, So the question in the chat, and this is where I'm kind of leading, is it hard to become an authorized repair center for a small shop? And how?
Nearly impossible.
Okay. That's okay.
There are so many rules regarding it. Mm. And if you ever become it, then there's a lot of things you can't do. I'm technically – now, the rules might have changed. So this is the way I understood it about 3 years ago when I was working really closely with an Apple authorized service provider. We call them AASPs.
Right.
You can't work on PC stuff.
Wow.
You have to have that a completely separate division. Now, Micro Center and stuff like that, they get kind of exceptions because they're big national companies.
Right.
But Apple is really not accepting those because there's no advantage for that. If there's an Apple retail store nearby, I've told you basically have a snowball's chance in heck of getting an AASP. Moreover, if you do that, you must accept warranty repairs, and the warranty reimbursements are utter crap.
Oh, okay.
And your reimbursement depends on how quickly you repair the product. So I know the AASP I worked with, they would have a machine on the bench for a week because they ordered the part and it kept going to the Apple retail store. And they could actually see the tracking. And it was going there and they're like, okay, you're dinging us for this repair taking too long and you're not shipping us the darn parts. How do you expect us to stay in business? And Apple, you know, I put in the chat now, but the shruggy, they're like, whatever, you know, that's not our problem. They're your competitor. So I would say as a independent computer consultant, if you have a choice, work closely with your AASP. They want to be more of a partner because you two have the same enemy, which is your Apple retail store.
Okay.
So if you can get in good with an AASP, they'll send referrals your way. You should also get in good with the Apple retail stores because they're technically only supposed to send referrals to Apple members of the Apple Consultants Network, which is about, depending on with the certification cost, $800 to $1,000 a year.
Ew.
And that's like I describe it as a membership into a country club. Oh. That gets you in the door. That doesn't mean it gets you business.
Huh.
So I know of people who are not ACNs and get a ton of referrals. I was an ACN for, I think, 4 or 5 years, and I did not get a single referral from my Apple retail store. They're like, we already have people we work closely with, and, you know, sorry. You know, we know we're supposed to do that, and whenever I knew a manager was changing over at the Apple retail store because all of a sudden I'd get a phone call from a referral. I'm like, oh, they're enforcing the policies because they're supposed to use an Apple Consultants Network locator, and they're supposed to show you the screen and say, okay, here are the ones nearby. These are all, you know, certified. Their certifications are up to date, and they've paid into this network. Beyond the Apple Consultants Network is simply an opportunity to do business with Apple. They'll give you some small NFRs, but you know the operating system's free, so that doesn't really make a difference. You get some vendor discounts, but I'll tell you, I haven't been in the ACN for years, and if I say, hey, I'm an Apple consultant, give me that same discount, like with the VMware, they're like, yeah, sure, you know.
All right, so we already have a nay for the Apple Authorized Repair Center, a nay for the Apple Consultants Network. What about Apple certification? Is that worth it?
I would say it's just like the certifications and the PC industry.
Okay.
It's nice to have, but it doesn't get you anything. If you actually were working for an Apple authorized service provider, you would have to have someone on staff with a certain number of certifications in order to do the warranty repair. Okay. Nothing is stopping you or I from working on without certifications. Now, I got my certifications. I'm looking at my wall here, I guess 10.5, 10.7, and 10.8, because I had to keep my certifications up to date to be in the consultants network.
Oh, okay.
And it's about $200 for the test.
So that's not too bad.
It's not too bad, but no one has ever asked for my certifications. The one nice thing you get with the certification is legally you are not allowed to use any Apple trademarks or anything like that.
Okay. You could put it on
the page.
Yep.
But I am allowed to say I am an Apple authorized, I'm sorry, an Apple certified support professional.
Okay. Now, what about Apple authorized reseller? So we got four things here. And the last one, Apple authorized reseller.
Yeah. Basically, you're competing with Apple on that. So I would suggest you just take a hammer and bang it against your head because it would be less painful than trying to deal with Apple. Because you are not only are you competing against the retail operation, you are competing against the mail order business, and you're competing with the other big guys, and you can't charge less. They set the pricing. So you're going to make this tiny sliver of money, and you're going to deal with a whole lot of hassle. That's where you're like, hey, go ahead, use the affiliate link for the Mike Tech Show or something else. Go on Amazon and have them order it, because your margins are going to be so slim, it's not going to be worth it. I know someone who was, again, that Apple authorized service provider and an Apple reseller, and they would make 10, 15, 20 bucks on a machine. And then they would take their student discount, which you can't get as an Apple reseller. Only the Apple retail operations or online will give you the student or government discounts. The right. secret is if you go on the website.
And just pick education.
I'm sorry, what?
Just pick education for the store.
You said it, I didn't. I've seen people do that. So they online, they don't ask. If you go to the store, right. you do have to show something.
Right. And you can save a few hundred bucks. Yeah.
You save about 100, 200 bucks, and you can't, an Apple reseller can't give out that discount.
Right.
So, I live in a primarily college town. So it was impossible because they're like, give me my education discount. Well, I can't give that to you. You have to go to Apple. Well, I'll just go to Apple for everything. Why should I even talk to you?
Well, then that's where we come in, where you say, well, I can help you maintain it and transfer your files, help you back up, help you print. And that's where we got to be ready with all those nice things. Keep it tweaked and tuned and optimized. And that's my advice. I guess that's our advice here, which is send the client to the Apple store or online and help them pick what they need. And then you support it and make it all in consulting.
Exactly. In fact, I will tell a client, they'll come into my office or I'll go on site. I'll use an affiliate link. We'll buy the computer there, have it shipped to their house. I don't want them to go to an Apple retail store because then they're going to be upsold on the transfer of the data. Even if they do that, though, Apple will only support Apple products. If you are having a problem with Microsoft Word, they're like, use Pages. If you have a problem with a virus in Chrome, for example, it's infected. They're like, oh, we've got the solution for you. Run Safari. That doesn't help. Especially with our client bases, they're going to want Microsoft Office and they're going to want it to work. If they have any problems, Apple will throw up their hands. The other thing you pointed out, one of the things, once a computer is of a certain age, they pretty much won't touch it.
Oh, I know.
So if you have a client with, let's say, a 7-year-old MacBook, they love it. It's a 17-inch. Apple doesn't make the 17 inches anymore, and the hard drive died. Apple's like, we're not going to touch it. And that's actually, those older Macs are pretty easy to swap out the hard drives.
Yeah.
So, they'll charge Apple prices for the hard drives. You can't go into an Apple store and say, put in this hard drive.
Right.
Sorry, you didn't buy it from Apple.
Right.
We're not going to help you with it.
I'll never forget
where we come in.
I'll never forget how scared I was the first time that I opened up my MacBook Pro, the 2010, and I read online. I did all my homework, and I was like, okay, I got these 12 screws I got to remove and just make sure I'm putting them in the right order off to the side. And it was pretty painless, that model, to open that up. I bought my Apple certified memory from Amazon at a discount and then my Samsung 500 gig SSD and put it in. And then that's where I had my Mavericks boot and I set it up and I was like, wow, I did this with no problem. Even though I was successful at that, I still don't feel comfortable doing that, anymore. So I don't crack them open anymore. But,
that goes full circle to where we talk about getting involved with this. I would buy a broken Mac, like that MacBook with the cracked screen, and try to do those upgrades. If you break it, you know what? Now you learned, and it didn't cost you a lot of money. That's how I learned the PC stuff. When I first learned PC, I bought a pallet of computers at an auction, and this was 1990 or so. This was back when you had the 8-bit ISA cards that you could put in backwards.
Yeah.
I did not realize when they just put it on auction block, they just throw everything in. I'm like, oh, there's a card. Let me put it in. I put it in backwards. Plug it in. Huge sparks of smoke. Yeah. Blew the circuit in the house. Blew the chair back. My mom is screaming at me. What did you do?
Yep.
It's like you're never touching a computer again.
Let me tell you. You never – my early days, and I don't know if I've ever told this story, I don't think today this can happen, but I was playing with my first big SCSI drive and a SCSI controller, and I put the SCSI cable on the parallel port. Wrong. No. I did it backwards, something, whatever. The pinout, I melted the cable. I mean, I literally, the cable flamed up. And it was, oh, my God. And it was, I had to pull the power plug, and I was like, there's smoke in my basement. And yeah, that's how you learn. If you don't fail, you are not going to learn. And that's the bottom line on this. As we start to get into the home stretch, I want to fast and furious here go over links and utilities that we didn't cover that are important. And you listed a couple that we didn't get a chance to get to. And I want to make sure, and I want to see how you feel about them. So we talked about the general cleanup tool, the Sierra cache cleaner. Disk repair and disk cloning.
Disk repair.
Yes.
Now there's some basic stuff just like check disk on the PC.
Right.
It's very basic.
Yes.
Probably the best tool to have is Disk Warrior. That cleans up all sorts of problems on the Mac. I'm trying to think of an equivalent of that on the PC. I don't think there's anything like that, because just the nature of NTFS is slightly different.
But right. But Disk Warrior, is that free or we got to buy it?
No, it's expensive. Ooh. I want to say it's about $120.
Now, can you use it on multiple systems? Is it like a technician's license or?
No. You're technically supposed to buy it for every computer you run it on. Mm. I will leave that to you.
Okay. Decision. All right.
I don't believe they even sell a technician's license.
Okay.
On that.
What about for cloning?
Cloning, there's two products I have a preference. Super Duper.
Yep.
Is I've free. Heard of
that. Yep.
A carbon copy cloner is paid. The difference between Super Duper and carbon copy cloner is like a Shadow Protect, Markem, Reflect backup.
Okay.
It can do incremental cloning, where Super Duper, I believe,
one shot
doesn't fully support that. Yeah. I tend to use Super Duper on site. If I'm at my office, I've got a license of carbon copy cloner.
So really, when I take my iMac in, they should use Super Duper to a solid state drive, right?
Correct.
And then put the solid state drive in.
Apparently, is a little bit better. It's some. They say that they've got a special optimization strategy, I think, for SSDs. I don't know if I buy that, but yeah.
Well, I use Acronis for my Windows. If I'm cloning a drive, it's like Acronis. There's that's it. You know, no problem. Yep. All right,
super easy on a Mac.
Nice. That's what we need to hear. Disk inventory tool. Now, what do you mean by disk inventory tool? What kind of inventory are we getting?
A lot of times you're going to have clients with a MacBook Air with 128 gig hard drive. And they're like, my hard drive's full. What do I do?
Okay.
You're like, I don't know where this stuff is. Daisy Disk will do a disk inventory, tell you what's taking up all the space.
Oh, okay. So taking
up the space is their iPhone backups.
Okay. So this is sort of like TreeSize Pro or
TreeSize Stat.
Okay.
Yep.
That's awesome.
And that's again a NAG where you open it, depending on how long you've had it on there, it'll make you wait before you open it. We've already talked about ETRAY check. Disk Warrior will also do a little bit if the drive is really messed up. It'll do some data recovery. It'll put things in the right place so you can access
them. You hit it. You said the word data recovery. Okay, what's your favorite? Okay, I deleted my files and I don't have a backup. What do we use for recovery on Mac?
I like Data Rescue by ProSoft. What I like about them is they will charge you based on the amount of data you recover. So you get, I want to say it's something like, is it like 2 gigs for free with Data Rescue?
Okay.
And then you get a little bit more. What they sell, and I would recommend it when you're starting out, especially if you don't have a bunch of Macs to run recovery on in a shop, they will sell you an external hard drive that you can boot off of, that you can run data recovery and copy it to that hard drive. So that is really slick.
All right. So that's the big data recovery. Now, what's the cheap free? I need the undelete a file recovery.
Free is worth the price you pay for it sometimes.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
I know. And I would say ProSoft's Data Rescue is probably the closest to that because they'll give you a little bit for free.
Oh, okay. Right, because you get the 2 gig. Yeah.
Data Guru, I think, gives you a little bit for free. That's one. Data Guru and File Salvage are two other file recovery utilities. And when I first was testing them, like, these look exactly the same. And apparently there was some kind of legal conflict between the two, and they use kind of the same recovery engine. So I've got it all. If I had to pick one, I would say the first thing I would get is ProSoft's Data Rescue.
Right.
Then if that doesn't find things, I will run File Salvage.
Okay.
If that still has trouble, there's Stellar Phoenix, and they're a popular name on the PC line because they do like Outlook and stuff like that. That program does a really good job. It is a horrible interface, and it is ungodly slow.
Oh, okay. All right.
But that's where, if nothing else works, I find Stellar Phoenix works the best. And it will actually it'll recover stuff off the NTFS partitions and stuff like that, where most of the Mac utilities will only do HFS Plus.
That's awesome. I have a couple final utilities that one's not here, and this is something I ran into. So I have a client that has an external drive or whatever, and I need to sync. I want the equivalent of sync back from the Windows side for the Mac.
Carbon what is copy it? Cloner.
Pardon me?
Carbon copy cloner.
Carbon copy cloner. Now, that'll sync files.
That will sync files, yes.
Okay. All right.
And then again, SuperDuper, I think, does the same thing. I think if you do the paid version of that, it does that. But that's where I would pay for Carbon Copy Cloner. What I like about Carbon Copy Cloner, I believe, over SuperDuper, and again, these, just like on the PC world, you go back and forth with utilities and they change. I know Carbon Copy Cloner will actually send me an email report when it's done. So I kind of like that.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. I don't remember if Super Duper does that. I just always go with Carbon Copy Cloner for stuff like that.
All right. What is your process? And this is going to be the final question as we're over an hour, which is great. And, man, we could do a part two with this very easily. I forgot my password on my – especially the admin password. I can't tell you how many times I'm at a client and – I guess they have it automatically boot where they don't have to type their password. And now I need to install Malwarebytes and I need a password. And I don't have the admin password. How do we reset that? How do you get it if you run into a client with that, like that?
Okay. If they, it's like, think about Microsoft Windows 10.
Okay.
You can sync your password with Microsoft.
Right.
Or you can do it locally. If you synced your password with Apple,
you can.
It is associated with your Apple ID. You can, if you know your Apple ID, you can reset it pretty easily.
Okay. All right.
If not, you have to generally boot. If they did the installer correctly, there should be a recovery partition on your Mac. You hold down the Option key and you choose the recovery. Or you've got your USB drive with your operating system to install it. You can boot off of that. Then, and I don't have the procedure memorized, but you go to terminal and I think you type reset password and it brings up the password reset utility.
Oh, so, okay. Nice. All right.
That's really easy, but here's the caveat. There's a big caveat with it. There's a keychain on the Mac. It stores all your passwords to your websites and your Wi-Fi and all that
reset
great
that.
Crap.
You're going to lose it.
If you reset your computer's admin password, your keychain is still set to the old password. For security reasons, because it's so easy to change the computer's password,
right?
You can't get into the keychain because otherwise, heck, I have physical access to your computer, two commands, I go ahead and I've got access to every password to your Facebook, all that stuff.
Good warning. Good.
If you reset the admin password, the client's going to lose all their saved passwords, which for some clients are like, hey, you know what? It's my Wi-Fi. Right. I know my Facebook.
Exactly. It's only a couple things.
It's a nightmare.
Right. No, that's a good point. That's a good point.
There's a BIOS password equivalent of that, where you can't access the encrypted files on the Mac without that admin password. And that is much harder to reset if they have the encryption on the Mac.
Okay.
Again, just like a PC, you'd have that same thing with TrueCrypt or something like that.
All right.
That's a slightly separate procedure. The average user, though, you should just be able to go into the recovery partition and reset it.
Okay, cool. And now we got a question in from Facebook, and this is from Jerry. And okay. Have you used the clean tool Applejack?
Gosh, I haven't heard Applejack in years. I believe that's a command line for primarily memory. I have not used that in so long. I don't remember.
So you would recommend EtriCheck, right? Did I say that right?
Yeah. No, I'm looking. Okay, it's still around. It's a free utility. It's a command line utility primarily.
Ew. I mean, I don't mind command lines, but ew.
Yeah, I'm just looking it up here. I used that back in the days. Hardware diagnostics are often built into modern Macs as well. So you just hold down, I believe, Command D, and you can get into some basic Mac diagnostics. So it's not really needed. If I need advanced diagnostics, it sounds crazy, but I'll use PC Doctor, the bootable USB utility.
Yeah.
It will actually do hardware diagnostics on a Mac.
Oh, nice. That's a good tip. I like
that. Yeah. All the diagnostics that Apple uses, Apple controls. Right. So they've got access to a whole slew of tools we don't have access to.
That's awesome. Well, two final links that you mentioned that we didn't get to that I'm going to make sure they go into the show notes. And I check these out. And I love, love, love this one. And Dr. Dave supplied how to check the warranty and the model. And there is a checkcoverage.apple.com. So I would think that's awesome. So you can get to see what, you know, whether that's, you know, you have the serial number and you can, whether it's under warranty or not. I do that with Dell. You know, I'll put in the service tag, you know, and HP has one. Most of the manufacturers have one. So that's good. And then check OS compatibility. And that's, what is that? Roaringapps.com/apps. Roaringapps.com/apps. So I'm adding them, and that's to check whether your the operating system compatibility with a program. So, and I guess mileage will vary there. You know, some things I was told won't work that do, you know, and I guess that can happen.
The one we see the most problems with is an old version of Quicken. Apple made there's a big jump between Snow Leopard 10.6.8 and 10.7.
Right.
And if you do that install, all of a sudden their old version of Quicken won't work. And they freak out about that. And a lot of people are having more and more trouble with the browser, the Safari that's in 10.6.8. I know it sounds really specific and it's really weird, but Southwest Airlines website doesn't work on Safari for Snow Leopard. Okay. So we do about an upgrade a week because of Southwest Airlines. So I need to send them like a gift card this year because they've really helped the bottom line.
Yep.
You do want to check that before you just go ahead and do these upgrades.
That's a great point. That's why we want these links. I want this to be this show 612, the ultimate Mac utility show notes of links. There's going to be a lot. The show notes are going to be huge. I'm going to make sure I get everything and get every link to every product, every service that we've talked about here. I want to ask, would you do the following? Consultants that are listening, myself included here, if we want to take on some Mac work and we're in over our head or it gets a little, will you work with other consultants and represent them in solving the problem and do maybe a consultant to consultant rate? I know I do that sometimes, you know, for servers and things. Do you welcome that? Is that,
you know, I've thought about that a little bit. Let me get back to you on that. That's yes. Definite possibility.
Because I see an opportunity. Cause someone like myself, if I get in, I would rather bring you in on solving a complex problem than sending them to the Apple store. Okay. So, an example. This is a real world example that I'm living right now. So the client, they redo their system. This is that client. They reimaged their system. But guess what? They set up the mail wrong. They set them up as IMAP. Well, they blew away all their mail as POP, which deleted from the server in Mac Mail, an app that I don't use. Okay. I'm a big Outlook person on the Mac. So now they upgraded them to a newer OS. So Time Machine has Mac Mail version 2. I need to get it into Mac Mail version 3. Don't want you to answer now. But that gets kind of complicated. And that's beyond my pay grade. So I need to bring in someone that can help me, but I don't want to push them to an Apple store.
You don't. Yeah, I would not recommend the Apple store for two reasons. One, they have such specific procedures.
Right.
They will not do things that necessarily make sense, but it's because of liability reasons. They don't want to touch things. And one thing they don't touch is data. Huh, you walk into an Apple store, you have to accept you will lose your data and you will waive any data rights when you walk in.
That's why I got the panic phone call. Now, I helped them with everything else, but I couldn't get their mail back. Even though I retrieved the whole V2 directory, I don't know how to get it into that latest version of mail. But anyway, so as everybody's listening, and the reason why I wanted to tell that story is it can get complicated fast, you know, depending on what's happening. You know, there's a lot of things we talked about here that you can do and you can make good money in cleaning up and tweaking and tuning some Macs. And not risk the data. You know, you want to research and learn how to use Time Machine. And that's why you got to get a Mac in your hands so you can practice with this stuff. You buy an external drive, you format it the different formats that we talked about and try to transfer files. Then you hook it up and let it format for Time Machine. And then you start doing a backup and then you delete one of the files and you watch the restore process. You have to live and breathe this stuff in order to do it. But I throw this out there to Dave as a possible earning opportunity that partnering. It's something that I embraced a few years ago with listeners, consultant to consultants, where I'll help them with some clients. And I'm not MHS Consulting at that point. I'm whoever they are helping them, you know, and working with them. Or at least you got to promise not to steal the client and things like that. You know, I mean, that's easy. That goes without saying, you know, and that's something that I do. I even do, by the way, consulting here for other consulting firms, and I won't wear my MHS consulting shirt. I'm representing them. So it'd just be a collared shirt that I go in and, you know, they don't get my personal business card, you know, for my consulting business. But there's lots of opportunities. And through the whole show here, that everything we've talked about, I think encapsulates a lot of things that, depending on what you're doing, where you're at on the food chain here in the consulting or repair business, I think there's opportunities here. And I want to thank you so much for giving up some of your afternoon on a Saturday and joining us here and helping us cut through a lot of the tips and the programs. And we got some, you know, good questions. So I want to thank you. And can I plug your website?
Sure.
You need help?
You can.
Good.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
You can either go. My old website is www.caldrdave.com, or I've been redesigning it, and there's www.calldrdavekc.com. So that's the little bit better looking one.
Oh, okay. That's the one. Well, that's the one.
That's Tech Site Builder.
Yeah, nice. And my MHSconsulting.net is Tech Site Builder. That's exact. What I will do is that will be the website that I will put prominently in the show notes. And Dave, thank you. We got to do this again down the road on a follow-up as like a part two to the Mac, because I think what this will do is generate a whole new level of different questions too. So, and then we can address them. So again, if you have Mac questions, send them to me, and you know, within reason, you know, Dave and I will try to answer them, and you can send me an email at miketechshow@gmail.com. Do you want to give your email? You might get crushed.
That's fine. It's dave@coldrdave.com.
Okay. There we go. Dave, thank you so much.
My pleasure. I really appreciate being here.
All right. Thank you. Remember, if you buy anything from Amazon or know anybody that purchases from Amazon, please use my Amazon link, amazon.mikenation.net. Your price stays the same, but a small piece comes back for a commission and really helps support the show. I really appreciate it. Again, that's amazon.mikenation.net. I want to thank you for downloading and staying subscribed to the podcast. I will be back regular time Thursday night this week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.